Welcome to the weekend. Each week, I invite a keynote Sandler trainer to discuss strategies to improve behaviors, attitudes, and techniques using the highly successful Sandler selling system. This week, my guest, Rob Fishman. Rob, welcome to the program.
Thanks a lot, Jim. It's good to be here.
Now, I'm going to ask Rob, if you would, set the table, Rob, for us. How long have you been in Sandler? What's been your experience so far? Just so the listeners can get a little bit familiar with who you are and what you do.
Sure. Based out of Long Island, New York, I've been in the Sandler family for about 10 years now, and background coming through the world of retail. I'm a recovering retailer and have been working with my partner, Rich Isaac, for the past 10 years and having a lot of fun.
That's awesome. And Long Island, is your marketplace New York City or outside outlying areas?
Well, I think you have to come pay us a visit. We're about an hour outside of New York City. Long Island has, we've got, I think it's 14 miles wide and 107 miles long.
Wow.
So that's why they call it Long Island. And we're kind of towards the middle when it comes to how far out from the city. So about a good hour drive.
Yeah, I will come out for a visit. Thanks for the invitation.
You got it.
So let's talk a little bit. Subject today is on account planning and territory management. I think account planning can be an oxymoron because most of us don't do it. We just go blow and go, right? I'm going on a sales call and then I wing it. And then when it's done, I wonder, gee, what happened? Account management can be the challenge of how do I make sure I stay sticky with my clients. So give us an overview of how you define account management and why is that important for anybody who's in sales?
Okay, that's a good question, Jim. And let me set the stage. Let me give a metaphor of an engine and an engine containing four cylinders. And the success of a business is really that all four cylinders are functioning as well as they could. So for the purpose of today's topic is really about looking at, and whether you're a small business owner or an independent salesperson yourself, or you're part of a larger team, is we look at the type of accounts that we're looking at. So I'm going to give you an acronym, which is the acronym of CARE, all right? K-A-R-N-E. And by the acronym, I'm going to talk about those four, right? The bucket number one is the K account or keep accounts. And this is, for many people, is the lifeblood of our business. These are customers that love us, customers that stick around for years and years and years. They're the people that might refer us to others as well. There are certain descriptions of the type of customer that we have. So that's really the K category. Moving on to the A is the attain. And the attain is really about selling new into new. It's a new customer. It's a prospect. And how do we get in front of them? How do we identify who they clearly are and categorize them? So that's all part of the A bucket. Mm-hmm. I'm going to move on now to the R bucket. I'm giving you a pretty much a 38,000 foot view.
Good.
R is, you know, has anybody lost a customer? And if so, why did we lose that customer? What's a strategy we can develop that we reapproach them and re-engage them for the purpose of the chance that we could be doing business again? Hey, it does happen. And what is our strategy for us to get in front of them again, for us to begin and renew a relationship? That's R for recapture. And then finally is E for expand. And in my experience, I've seen that E is very low-hanging fruit for some people. They may have done a real good job. You know, we may have heard in the world of sales about what is an upsell opportunity or a cross-sell opportunity. You know, because a customer is buying one item, does that mean that they could be buying other things? Because the relationship is created, there's a high level of trust there. So E is all about, well, you know, what strategies are we putting in place for us to be able to offer other things? Or in some cases in the world of sales, are we asking enough deep questions to really truly help our customer and prospect to find us as a resource rather than just that vendor mindset? How do we become more of that trusted advisor? So there are the four cylinders. So I kind of laid them out.
So keeping, attaining, recapturing, and expanding, great acronym to help us manage not only in our mind, but on paper, who should be in my sales pipeline. So where do we put our priority? How do we allocate time in managing these accounts using those four acronyms?
Great question. I would ask anybody that is listening to this to sort of do kind of a gut check. If you look at your client acquisition process, look at your client list, and I'd start to put them into buckets and maybe give a rating for each one of these categories on a scale of 1 to 10. You know, you may say that, hey, you know what? We're not really good at getting customers back. Once they leave, they're gone. So I might give the R a lower score. Maybe we're pretty good at expanding existing business. But I want you to just, I'm going to overlay one concept here, Jim, which is important, is that if I look at the box of keep and I look at the box of expand, I'm dealing with farming. Mm. If I'm looking at the attain and recapture, I'm looking at a hunting vernacular. So for some people who are comfortable in expanding business, then they may be in a case of saying, well, okay, what's my strategy for me to grow that business? There might be some people here that find that maybe 60 to 70% of their revenue comes from existing customers that we're looking to expand. There are some that may have a higher turnover or more transactional business, and they really need to feed the funnel of new customers. And that's really a lot of relying on the A. So this is not a one-size-fits-all process. This is going to be a process of evaluating where we're strong and looking at ways we can leverage that. But it's also an opportunity for us to really carefully look and say, if I am going to work at peak efficiency and all four cylinders are going to operate at the best possible way they can, then what steps do I need to take in streamlining a process and getting more efficient in the area that I may not be as strong in? So that makes some sense?
No, it absolutely does. And I think too often, those of us who are in direct sales will focus our efforts on things that are comfortable, and we're just avoid doing those things that are out of our comfort zone. And it can be, for example, I like hunting. I may not do a good job of maintaining relationships. I may sell them and hope the team takes care of them.
Yeah.
If that's the case, I might have to be a little more disciplined to go back and manage the relationship. And conversely, if I'm more comfortable maintaining, then I may not have to get out of my comfort zone and do some things that will help me either retain, either attain, or recapture clients that I'm missing.
Right.
So with that said, comfort zone then becomes a bit of our adversary. How do we manage getting out of our comfort zone?
Great question. So let's put a filter over this whole conversation now of the behavior, attitude, and technique triangle, because I think that really applies here in this case, Jim. Because again, everybody's different, all right? So if I put the behavior, attitude, technique triangle, let's start with behavior. And I know that there are people that somehow we hit a rut every once in a while. We're not really doing as well as we could. It starts to affect us between the ears. Mm-hmm. Our brain's processing 60,000 thoughts per day. And that by act, I think it's about 72 to 78% of those thoughts by percentage are negative or self-limiting. Wow. It's kind of hard to stem the tide of what might be a lot of head trash.
Right,
so
right.
To do some self-cerebral sanitation means I've got to look at behavior first. What are some things that I could be doing that would be more effective that might change my belief structure if in fact that I'm in a hunting versus farming mindset? How do I take myself out of that comfort zone? It's very, I think personally, you know, my opinion, it's difficult for some people to just will themselves into being, all right, I'm going to pick up a phone and I'm going to call somebody who doesn't know
right,
me.
Right.
Voice. Question is, what behaviors, what is it we need to do on a small incremental basis that'll get us there? So behaviorally is, what steps do I take if in fact I find on my K-A-R-N-E, my care, that I'm not strong in attaining new business because maybe I'm very comfortable in farming business? That means that I've got to develop a structure of finding a prospecting plan. What are going to be some activities I may do that will put me in a position? Would it be that I'm going to be using LinkedIn as a tool? Would it be that I'm going to look for connections or connections and use referrals, which for some people is an 80 to 90% of their business comes from a well-executed referrals process.
Right.
Strategic alliances. How are they getting introductions? How well are they communicating their message? But it's a fact of doing what they need to do. If I go over to the attitude, is how do I work on what's going on between my ears so I feel as comfortable as I can in all four of those categories? Let's talk about recapture. In some cases, a relationship might have ended, maybe sometimes for not the most ideal reasons.
Right.
So it may mean taking ourselves out of our comfort zone to pick up the phone, and in some cases, maybe rehashing something that might not have been a pleasant topic at the time to see, hey, is there any opportunity for us to reengage in a dialogue? You know, a lot of things have happened since then. And it at least allows the opportunity. So that combination of behavioral, picking up the phone and making the call to somebody, in addition to the mindset of when we pick up the phone, magic happens, is part of the equation. Now let's jump over to technique. There is a set technique at how we can develop an effective and efficient process of identifying each one of these four categories. It is a customizable thing. What that means is, hey, how do I describe what might be the traits and tendencies of a keep account in my world? What might be the traits and tendencies of a new prospective client? That's somebody who is, you know, I describe them as, if that's my ideal client, have I done a good job in the technique side of creating an ideal client profile? How do I explain to others who it is that I'm looking to see? That's all part and parcel.
Right.
Then we get into recapture, right? That's easy enough for us to discover. And then expand. What are some traits and tendencies of that type of an account? So then I can start to go through, if I've got a multiple list of people that I've dealt with in the past, that I want to deal with in the future, how do I go through each one and not have to reinvent the wheel every single time?
Rob, I like the quote that says, a plan eliminates the agony of a decision.
Love it.
And what you're sharing with us is how important it is for us to have a clearly defined written plan. Once you've got the plan written, I got the behaviors I need to do defined. I know the attitude I have to adopt when I'm doing those specific behaviors. Here's the techniques that I'm going to use in executing to find What are the clients I want to keep, attain, recapture, and expand? Great way to help us see how to manage our accounts. Give your contact information, Rob, in case there's somebody out there that would like to have a conversation with you.
Absolutely, Jim. Yeah. Again, Rob Fishman. And my email is rob.fishman@sandler.com.
And I'm Idaho's Sandler trainer, Jim Stevens. You can visit our website at crossroads.sandler.com and download the 3 biggest mistakes salespeople should never make. For specific questions or comments, you can call us at 208-429-9275. This is Sandler Training, finding power in reinforcement. Welcome to Entrepreneur Radio, where we get to learn more about the real heroes of our economy, the independent business owners and leaders who have the courage to start a business, run a business, hire employees, and grow our economy. I'm Jim Stevens with Sandler Training. We've invited Rich Carden with BizMilk. Rich, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jim.
Rich, is full disclosure, is a client of ours and has just launched into a new venture, so I'm excited to hear more about, Rich, what you have developed. The thing I like about Entrepreneur Radio is it lets us hear about some of the successes, challenges, strategies, failures even, that have helped people learn to develop, grow, innovate, and create businesses. We get to learn life lessons without having to go through them. So we're going to learn from your mistakes.
I'm happy to help.
There's a lot of ammo there, huh?
There is.
So let's start with, why start a business?
I was in the military for a long, long time. And after getting out and retiring, I figured that I wanted to do something that I could be in control of. I worked in sales for 3 years and really, really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the interacting with business owners. I learned a lot about my own capabilities, my own shortcomings. But what it did ultimately, Jim, was give me the confidence to step out on my own.
Stepping out on my own involves a lot of risk. So what are some of the things that go through your mind as you launch into that independent entrepreneurial exercise?
First and foremost, is there a paycheck at the end of the road?
Right.
That was my biggest concern. I wasn't sure if we could make money. But talking to my partner named Alan, very, very smart guy. He runs another business. Between the two of us, we were fairly confident in our ability to sell a product. So it was, just got to rip off the Band-Aid. You just had to do it.
And so you're the sales side?
Pretty much sales and business development.
And then his is the fulfillment side?
Strategy, production, yes.
So take us through, Rich, what does BizMilk do?
We're a search engine company. And what we do is we really focus on content marketing with an emphasis on SEO. So what that means is we take your website and help it be more understandable, more searchable, more user-friendly. Because the challenge for any company like ours is trying to figure out what Google is trying to figure out, which they're trying to figure out what you want as a searcher. So when you click for, if you're looking for an HVAC company, an air conditioning company, Google is trying to figure out, how does Jim Stevens search for that? So what our job is with our client is to make your website as friendly to that as possible, to help Google say, okay, Jim is looking for an AC repair company in Meridian. Where are these people at? What's the best one for him? So our job is kind of think ahead a couple of steps and make sure that your site is set up for that. And we do that, a few different ways. Mostly, we want to add quality content that makes your site a resource.
So how important is the organic searchability? Why not just pay-per-click?
Pay-per-click has its advantages. One advantage is it's more of an immediate return. So while you're building that organic base over time, you can have a presence pretty quickly with a pay-per-click campaign. But organic is what lasts over time. Yeah. Once you have it, as long as there's not algorithm changes, as long as your competition doesn't wake up and become smart to what you're doing, it will maintain itself over time fairly well. That's not to say that you can fire and forget and 2 years from now you'll still be on page one, because that's not the case.
My understanding is that Google and other search engines change their algorithms frequently, kind of keep guys like you employed and on your feet. Is that fair?
That's probably a fair statement. They change them, but I think a lot of times those changes are subtle enough where you're not going to go from page one to page six all of a sudden. You just may find yourself sliding down a little bit, and then it's up to us to make sure and stay on top of it. We kind of equate it to if you do your own taxes. To do your own taxes is a monster. Mm-hmm. You're a smart guy, you can do it, but you just don't have the time, because there are changes to the tax codes, there's changes to the laws. What can I claim this year I couldn't claim last year? That's the same thing that we kind of look at for our clients, is we're going to just pay attention to what's going on so you can go do what you do. Mm-hmm. You could do what I do. It's not that hard. It's just, do you have the time to do it? Do you have the time to stay on top of it? It's just a matter of time.
As you mentioned earlier, that it's a lot of it is content. content building. Mm-hmm. So I would think that's a big gap. Do I write it? Do you write it? How do you get the content?
You know, what's funny is most every new client we talk to says, well, you know, I'll write it. And to be honest, you're not going to. You're just not.
We're going to be bugging you for weeks and it'll never get done.
Exactly. I'm going to drag you down this road for about a month. And finally, you're going to realize I'm just going to write this for you. Now, I'm going to send it to you to approve it.
Yeah.
But again, I'm going to need an understanding from you that when I send you this, I need you to reply pretty quickly because we need to get this online. But most of our clients, at some point fairly quickly, within a month or two, they realize that we have their best interest in heart. We know what we're doing. And they pretty much just cut us loose and we'll write the content as needed. So, but we typically write it all.
Yeah, because I think that's the biggest roadblock. People go out and hire a company to help them with optimizing their search rankings and so on and so forth. And if the real telling element is content and you're waiting on them to create content, you're going to be frustrated.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be a long wait. Because again, people are busy. I get it.
So, Rich, starting a business, thinking about the entrepreneurial efforts involved there, in your strategic planning, actually, maybe I should ask, did you develop a strategic plan? And if so, in that plan, how long did you anticipate it taking before you were actually able to take a paycheck?
We probably should have done more strategic planning, to be quite honest. Fortunately, I'm in a position where I wasn't desperately in need of that paycheck, so I could be patient. And again, like I said, my partner also has another business, so he could be patient. But it was realistically 4 months before we took our first paycheck.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, by design some. We could have taken us a few small checks. But before we took anything with any significance, it was you know, again, 4 months or so.
Yeah. And how long have you been up and running?
About a year and a half.
About a year and a half. Mm-hmm. So what advice would you give to somebody who's thinking about starting a business?
I think first advice is think about the viability. Is anyone else doing it? If nobody is doing that, it doesn't mean it can't be done. I think it just means think a little more about do it before you're going to do it.
Yeah.
It may be a perfect opportunity. If nobody else is doing it, there may be a niche market there just for you.
Right.
But again, ask yourself the question, why is nobody else doing this? I think having a business plan would be smart. Thinking about your competitors, think about marketing, think about your own marketing. Luckily, as marketers, that was something that was already kind of ingrained in what we did. Mm-hmm. But what I saw, especially in my previous job in sales, you saw a lot of business owners that they got some cash together, they bought some inventory, rented a space, put up a sign, and they were ready to go. Mm-hmm. Well, they forgot about the marketing part.
Right, right.
They forgot about inviting people into their store. And you know, there's a lot of failing businesses for that reason.
So in your business, you got into a business niche that has a lot of players. What did you feel in your market you were adding that you didn't see met by other competitors?
That's a good question because there are a lot of good companies here locally. But for us, I think the difference is, for one thing, we are local. There is a fair amount of competition that appears to be local. If you were just to go out and search for search engine marketing companies online, they're not all local. They look local.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one thing when you can walk into my office at any time during the week and ask what's going on. There's a different level of understanding and there's a different sense of urgency.
Mm-hmm.
I think if there's anything that we bring to the table, it's sense of urgency. We want this as badly as you do because it makes us feel good that you're happy. So we want to be a part of your team. We want a seat at that table that we know that if you call us and your questions, you know, we're going to get back to you quickly. It's not something that's, oh, I'll call Jim later. He's fine.
Yeah.
You know, if you call me, I'm going to call you right back if I'm on the other line. And I don't know that very many people do that.
Yeah. And I think your success with a client is really success for you because that's how you get referrals. That's how you build a book of business.
Very much.
So give us a description of who is your ideal client. What are some of the firms, and maybe you can't disclose them, and what's some of the successes you've been able to have for them?
I think our ideal client is someone small to medium. We like the service industries, people that are going out to people's homes and doing bids. We've got a hardwood floor company, a roofing company, junk removal companies. It just kind of fits our understanding of the world pretty well. Not to say that we wouldn't work with a restaurant or maybe a chiropractor, because we certainly will. It's just a different level of experience on our part.
So what are some of the successes that you've seen? I mean, you've been in business mm-hmm. a year and a half. That says something good.
Oh, yeah.
You must have had some successes. Share some of the testimonials or home runs you've hit.
One of our success stories, a company called Junk Bros right here in town, locally owned. Couple of brothers bought some trucks and they're out picking up junk. And there's a big need for that. People don't understand what, again, a company like this will do for you because they think, well, it's just garbage. It's just trash in my garage. It's not. They're giving you back the same thing that I'm giving you is time. If you don't mind loading up a truck or borrowing a truck from a friend, loading it all up yourself, taking it to the dump, paying the $12, unloading it yourself, taking an entire day to do this, well, then that's fine.
Yeah.
But again, if you've got a fair amount of junk, you can call someone like Junk Bros. They will come to your house, grab it all for you while you sit and drink a lemonade and watch them, and they'll take it away for you. That's, again, it's a niche market.
And what do they charge for that?
You You know, it depends on how much of the truck you fill up, but I think their prices start at like $50. I mean, $50 for an afternoon back, I'll pay that every day of the week.
Do they go and sort through and recycle? And
they do.
Try to make money off of the junk they've collected.
They'll donate to charities when possible. So if something is capable of being donated to like the Idaho Youth Ranch or whatnot, they'll take it and donate it. They'll take it and recycle it. If some things just have to be dumped, they'll just take it to the dump and dump it. But for you, the end result is the same. It's out of my garage.
Yeah, I accomplished my mission.
My mission is
with
accomplished.
With a minimal amount of personal discomfort.
Exactly.
Yeah, I love that. So what did you see? Were they a new business and how did BizMilk really help them?
They were a new business. There were a couple of companies in town that had been around for 6, 8, 10 years, and they were kind of the third sister coming up in the major junk removal companies, if you will. People that were doing it full time. People were really serious about it, not just, you know, a guy with a pickup truck. And we've worked with them for a little over a year now, and for just about any kind of Boise junk removal search query, they're going to be in the top one or two. So,
which kind of brings up a question that I always ask marketing firms when I'm considering hiring them. How are we going to measure return on investment? I'm sure you get that a lot, and I would guess that's a little bit tricky to answer.
It is tricky because I usually ask them a question back is, how do you grade success? What's my report card?
Good.
How am I going to know if I'm winning? Because I don't know. For instance, I've got a client right down the street here that called yesterday and says, hey, you know, our search traffic is down. Well, I mean, it's a seasonal business. I can't really control how many people are searching, but your placement in those searches are solid. So again, it's not always about how many people are coming in. It's kind of just being smart with the client, smart with the industry, and understanding the right questions to ask.
I like that term. Let's build the report card up front.
Yeah.
Let's get clear on what will we judge success on, and based on our mutual agreement, then let's audit our performance together. How often do you sit down with a client and do that kind of professional audit?
I'd say it depends on the client. Some are, you know, as you know, way more hands-off. Some are way more hands-on. They want to talk every week. We'll kind of, you know, play to their desires. Some are just happy to send a check, and as long as we're in the top, you know, two or three, they're pretty stoked.
Yeah, yeah.
But others, you know, they want to know where we're at. You know, how'd we do this month versus last month? So it really depends. We'll talk as much as you want. We've got one client in New York City. We talk to her every week. I mean, I'm on the phone every week with her for an hour.
How did you land a client in New York City?
A referral partner here. Built the website, did all the branding for them, but they didn't do the search engine optimization part of the business. So they referred them to us and we took it.
Oh, wow, that's cool. I didn't realize you had out-of-state clients.
Oh, yeah.
I'm thinking search engine optimization, why is that so important? And is that just the only thing you provide, or are there, seems like most people do websites and search engine and blah, 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 blah. Is your niche to be focused?
I like to be focused. It's much easier to do one thing really, really, really well than it is to do, you know, 10 things okay. Mm-hmm. So I would rather really focus on one thing and be really good at it. So what my partner Alan and I have decided is we really focus on content marketing, but content marketing in a way that we're using SEO to make it more effective. And the reason why search engine optimization and search engine marketing is so important is, unless you're in a business of less than 5 or 6 competitors in a market, somehow Google has to rack and stack all of these companies and return them in such a way to give somebody's going to have a competitive advantage. So again, going back to the HVAC, the air conditioning heating companies, I don't have any there are here in town. I'm going to guess there's 40, 50, yeah, 100. Yeah. I don't know. Figure there's about 10. Yeah, there's a lot. Figure there's about 10 returns for page one, 10 on page two, 10 on page three. Someone will always have to be racked and stacked as to which one's going to be one, which one's going to be two, which one's going to be three, which one's going to be four, based on the search terms. So if you're searching for best AC repair company in town, Google's going to come back in, you know, 0.024 seconds, whatever it is, and give you a stack of, you know, 1 to 10,000.
Right.
Well, that has to be done somehow. Somehow Google is figuring that out. So until page one can consist of 10,000 review or responses, someone's going to have to be in there. I don't want to say manipulate the system, but work the system in such a way that it's advantageous to our client.
So talk to the small business owner who's currently doing this on their own. What are the top 2 to 3 things they really should do to make sure they're in the running on search engine optimization?
I think about this kind of like a networking event. If you've been to network, I know you're feeling a networking event, so the same as mine. They're difficult, I think, sometimes to go to because you meet somebody, you shake their hands, and they start trying to sell you something.
Yeah.
I think if you look at your website, if all it's trying to do is sell somebody something, I think it is very difficult to get through very far through that website. Mm. Because again, I mean, how many times can I be sold something? What we try to do is look at your website and ask yourself, does this help? Does this provide information that someone who is not necessarily going to buy something from me would find valuable? In the hopes of the day they are are ready to buy. You are that authority. You're that trusted authority, that trusted source at that point. So, wow, I went to Jim's website when I didn't need to buy anything, and he gave me a lot of great information. Mm-hmm. Now that I'm ready to buy, I mean, he's the guy to me. I'm going to go talk to him now because he gave me all this great
support.
Yeah, he got all this support earlier when I really needed it. And now that I'm kind of at my extent of what I can do on my own, I'm going to need a professional. I think Jim's the guy.
And so what's the cost for a company like yours? Is it what's the range, if you would, in case we've got a listener out there who's thinking, yeah, I'd rather have somebody do it so I'm not stuck with this.
It varies. It varies greatly depending on what we're doing for you. You know, if it's just a simple AdWords campaign, you know, maybe a couple $100 a month. Just again, depends on what your needs are. But again, that now you've got to add an AdWords campaign budget. So, you know, a couple $100 for us to manage it, $400 or $500 a month for the ad clicks.
Yeah.
It still adds up.
Yeah.
For us to take over.
If you do approach it that way, that's a pretty tangible result. I can see. Am I able then to see how many of those clicks converted or no?
Yes. You can have it set to where you can see that a person came on the website and clicked your contact me box, called you on their mobile through the mobile. So you can see where people are going and what they're doing.
Yeah.
So it's pretty advantageous. Yeah. But for us to take over your entire search engine marketing and content marketing function could be anywhere from, say, $500 to $800. So again, not huge. Not huge. You know, we're going to spend time that you just don't have to do this. So, you know, how would you rather spend 10 hours a month trying to do my job or doing your job that you're out making much more money doing? Exactly.
I was talking to a prospect once, and he was giving me the list of all the things that he was doing. And I said, those sound like it's below your pay grade. And he said, I wouldn't pay somebody to do what I'm doing. I thought, well, there's something definitely wrong with that. It's the wrong thought for a small business.
What's funny is I just recently started using a maid service to clean my house. And I thought, you know, I don't know if I want to spend the money on this, but I can tell you.
It's worth it.
It's amazing. I've got so much time. I told the owner, I was like, I need another hobby. I didn't realize my hobby was cleaning the house.
Right.
And it's the same thing. You know, I could have do it myself, but now I've just got so much more time. I can actually finding more clients.
Right. Do something that's going to generate
revenue. More money.
That's awesome. Or find a new hobby.
Yeah.
Rich, give your contact information in case somebody would like to reach out to you.
You can call me at 208-590-6464. You can email me at rich.carden, and that's C-A-R-D-E-N, at bizmilk.com. Happy to help out, walk you through your process, see if there's something that we can do for you. You know, we're not right for everybody, but we're right for a lot of companies.
So I don't know that we got to cover the subject of your name, Bizmilk. How'd you come up with that?
My partner came up with it a couple years ago before we got together and really got serious about it. And his thought process at the time was, you know, milk is good for your bones, the calcium, building your structure. He said, you know, Bizmilk, it's good for your business bones. So we kind of took it a step further and integrated the slogan that Bizmilk does a business good.
Oh, that's interesting. Very, very clever.
I've had people tell me it was dumb. And then I asked them, you know, tell me about Microsoft. How dumb is that?
Really?
It's a terrible name.
That's a great point. Microsoft. What was that? What is it? Toilet paper?
Yeah, exactly.
Towels?
It's small and soft. I don't know what that means.
Great comeback. Rich Carden is my guest today. If you're interested in more information from Rich, he's available at 208-590-6464, or you can catch him on email, rich.carden@bizmilk.com. On Entrepreneur Radio, we share the stories of local and regional leaders and individuals who drive change to see how they've accomplished success. If you'd like to hear how we could help you, reach out to me, Jim Stevens, at 208-429-9275. We'll take a look at what you're doing, some of the challenges you might have, and find out if we can help. Thank you so much. We will be back in just a moment. So, Rob, we've been talking so far about managing accounts. You gave us the acronym CARE, K-A-R-E. K is keep, attain, recapture, and expand. You suggested that if we use the success triangle, we can focus on developing behaviors, attitudes, and techniques required to have success in each of these four categories. So we've got the strategy down. What's our next step?
So the next strategy is, and I've had people do this, well, they'll put together, first of all, describing the traits and tendencies. Let me talk about that for a second, right? And I've learned this from a gentleman by the name of Brian Sullivan, who is the author of the Enterprise Selling System for Sandler. I've had the good fortune of working with him with some clients internationally, and have learned a lot about, you know, what's a real simple way that we can communicate each four of these categories. And by watching him work, I've learned about that way of we describe. And let me give you an example of spiders and snakes. And, you know, how do we evaluate? The fact is that if we look at what a spider is, it could be something from a tarantula to a daddy long legs. Although they're both on the category of spider, they go into subcategories. That one is poisonous and one is not. Use the same analogy in a snake, right? They're both a garden snake and a king cobra are both, you know, they crawl, they're part of the reptilian family. But at the end of the day, again, one can, you know, one bite and you're dead, unless you've got that special antidote on you if you're in the brush, and the other is a simple garden snake. So what it really leads us to do is to get very efficient about how we describe what are the traits and tendencies in all four of these categories that we're dealing with. But let me focus if I can, because I would imagine that if we were to do a poll, that most people would say to you, you know, I'm just not getting in front of enough new opportunities on a regular, consistent basis, right? So I'm going to go there first. And I would ask the question, which is, all right, well, if that's the case, then what is the process that you go through in helping communicate the message out there, aside from picking up the phone, aside from if we have a retail establishment, getting people to come in the door, if we have a service-based business, how do we become top of mind? Aside from the picking up the phone and making, you know, the cold calls, and we know the famous line about cold calls is that nobody ever had to wait in line to do them. So then what is the plan? How well do we communicate and describe with specificity who that ideal client is? What type of business is it? Who is it that we want to talk to there? What are some of the current issues and challenges that they may be facing as to why they would want to talk to us? And that's where I think the connection goes. So on Attain is, well, we use the word pain quite often, which is, you know, what are their personal, emotional, compelling reasons to change? What's the gap they're facing? And our being very effective in account planning is on the A side of retaining new business is how well do we communicate with real accuracy so the people say, yeah, I get that. Mm-hmm. Now, they think about the common referral comes from that. And while we're on the topic, I find very often in the work we do with the referrals process, it leads to so much business for people. But I find that most people don't do a good job of the referral. And what they tend to do is they put the monkey on the back of the person they're asking the referral of. They'll say, hey, Jim, you know anybody that could use some training? You know anybody that could use some help with insurance? You know anybody who could use a new banker? And here's what happens. Now the monkey's on your back and you say, well, gee, I haven't really given it thought, but hey, let me give it some thought and I'll get back to you.
Yeah, right.
And who's thinking about it, right? And
now, you are. Now they're not.
No, the proverbial monkey's now on their back and they're thinking, oh man, now I got to think of names. And then the tyranny of the urchin kicks in. Now they're off doing other stuff. And then now we become a pest. Hey, Jim, did you happen to give any thought to somebody that you think could use some help? And now the monkey's back on your back. And I think what we could all be doing better of, and especially in this box on getting new business, is how good a job are we doing at defining our ideal client, defining the issues they go through to help those people make a connection, and then making suggestions. Maybe it's somebody you know from the club. Maybe it's somebody you know from school. Maybe it's somebody that you know that's work-related to you, right? A friend. And that's the part. So if you'll notice, it's all streamlining the process so we don't have to reinvent the wheel every single time. And that's the beauty of doing this kind of account planning piece.
Yeah, it's also the beauty of having a system. If you've got a system, you know where you are and you can start to streamline it. Every system is usually being tweaked and fixed because every time we go execute it, we learn more about how to perform it in a better way.
Well, think of this. Yeah. How many times have we heard this? You know, the system doesn't fail. We fail the system.
Yeah, good quote. So you talked a little bit in the first part about territory management. How does that differ from account management?
Well, we're getting into geographical stuff. If we're talking about a territory based on size, based on demographics. I think the piece here about is before we begin the prospecting, if we're looking for new business opportunities, or in fact, that we're looking for opportunities within a certain market area, how good a job are we doing in planning before we even execute, before we even make that call, that introduction? Territory can be geographic. I've seen in some cases, I've done work with a nutritional supplements provider. I've done work with them for many years. And I found that the sales team was just, you know, working very, very hard, not necessarily as smart as they could, because they were putting miles on their car and not really planning out where they needed to go at what time. Mm-hmm. So that was the challenge on the territory planning side. I thought for today was really identifying the account planning process, which is really about how effectively we're maximizing those four cylinders. You know, another piece that comes up here is about how well we create those relationships with the people that we're in touch with. And you might have had some people on your program talk about people buy from people they like and trust, people buy from people who are like them. But I think there's an important piece here about establishing the relationship really at the beginning about certain key criteria and how good a job we do that, especially on the recapture as well as the attain side, the hunting vernacular. And I'll say this because I find in the keep accounts and the expand accounts, there's generally a very functionally good relationship. There's a lot of trust built up. But now we look at the attain and recapture. That's where where I find that most salespeople don't do as good a job here in truly seeing where they're vulnerable with relationships they've got. Are they dealing with people who are a friend, dealing with somebody who's neutral in the relationship? You know, how many times has a person replaced somebody else at a company, which might mean the death of that salesperson because the relationship they built up with that one person is now over.
Yeah.
So that's part of, in some cases, we look at is that a threat and how to minimize that. And part of the work, and if you look at how to keep that relationship going in some of these areas, is to do a real true SWOT analysis. Where are we strong? What are some potential weaknesses we have? And now on opportunities and threats, if we are at risk of that person that loves us leaves and goes on, where does that leave us? And again, that's part of a process of maximizing those four cylinders.
So it's really about having a clearly defined plan anchored in our mind so that eventually it becomes second nature to focus on all four of these. And what I'm hearing you say is there probably isn't any one area that we should focus on other than perhaps looking at what is the low-hanging fruit. Fair?
Agreed. And by the way, some people would be very pleased that if their entire business is about hunting, and in fact, they're handing it off to somebody else to take care of, then that's okay. Because if you look at it, what I would suggest for everybody to do is to take stock. And I would take stock right now. I would look at your business. Look at where your business is coming from. See if you could put by percentage where you are. Is the majority of your business in keep accounts? Is the majority of your business in going after new and prospecting? Because that is what allows us to look at and be analytical about areas that we could strengthen up. But the other side of the coin, Jim, which is really important, is maximizing our strengths. There may be some things we are really, really good at. And I wouldn't want to take away from that, take away something we're really strong at and saying, well, listen, I'm not really good at recapturing, so now I'm going to devote all my energy to that is a mistake.
Not a good idea.
It's not a good idea. But I just want to create an awareness that there are four separate cylinders when it comes to how we plan business.
My guest today is Rob Fishman. Rob, give your contact information in case one of our listeners would like to reach out to you.
Sure. Rob.Fishman, F-I-S-H-M-A-N, at Sandler.com.
And I'm Idaho's CEO of Sandler Training, Jim Stevens. If you like this show and want to subscribe to our content, contact us by emailing crossroads@Sandler.com, crossroads@Sandler.com, or reach out and ask how to subscribe by calling 208-429-9275, 208-429-9275. This is Sandler Training, finding power in reinforcement. Rob, so far we've talked about the conceptual. I'd like us to get into some of the technical. So I don't suppose you'd be willing to demonstrate what some of this suggestions you're making might look like or sound like by doing a role play with me?
Sure, I'd be happy to.
So let's take, I was intrigued in the last segment, you mentioned that the low-hanging fruit, I think, in any business is getting your clients to sell for you.
Yeah.
And you do that by asking for referrals. And most people don't do it well. Rob used the analogy of you put the monkey on the person you're asking for the referral from's back because you aren't clear in helping them think through who they should refer you to. So if I'm a client of yours, Rob, and you're trying to help me help you find more clients, what's that conversation sound like?
Sure. Okay. So Jim, I appreciate your meeting me for lunch today. And I don't know if I get the opportunity to really sit with you and thank you for all of the opportunity for us to work together. By the way, how long are we working together?
Oh, it's been 5 years now.
5 years. Wow. I can't believe that.
Right. Time flies. You've gotten older.
Yeah. No, thanks.
But I haven't.
No. As a matter of fact, you know what? If it wasn't for Joan, we probably wouldn't be sitting here talking.
That's probably true.
Yeah. So Jim, what would you say over the past 5 years, what do you think's been the single most important thing that we've helped you with?
Well, it was not what I was expecting when I signed up for Sandler. I kind of thought I'd get increased sales, which that did happen. But I think the biggest benefit has been saved time. You've saved us a tremendous amount of time. We're not spending time in front of the wrong people like we did before.
Sure. Got it. And you know, I was thinking on my way over here is that I wonder if it wasn't for Joan, actually, you and I wouldn't have this chance to work together and helping in that respect. And you know, there's just so many folks out there that get that don't need and don't really get that kind of help.
Yeah.
You know, they find, although you know, there's people out there, and I guess my question for you is, now, who is it that you know, and who is it that you care about that you think might be open to a conversation with me? And certainly we're having lunch today.
Yeah.
If you remember back when we first got working together, I asked you, I said, listen, provided that we do a good job for you, that's our intention.
Right.
would you be okay down the road, certainly once we develop that relationship? Or I might sit and maybe suggest we do some brainstorming and think of people you could think of that may use the same kind of help the way that we've worked with you.
Yeah, no, I do recall that conversation. And of course, I'm always scouting for opportunities for you. And if I ever come across someone, I sure would refer you, and I have.
Yeah, appreciate that. And let me do this. And certainly we can park this for a different time if you want to do this. And by the way, it might even be something, I think you mentioned you're an avid golfer. Maybe it's somebody you play golf with. Let me think about it. You know, they own a business, they're working on Tyranny of the Urchin, they're just so busy, they got a team of people, they're just not able to get out of their own way sometimes. You know, busy folks. Vacation in a while.
Yeah, I can think of the only name comes to top of my mind. I don't think they would be a client of yours, but he owns a small manufacturing company. They build trailers.
Really? So what made you pick him? What's his name, by the way?
John.
John, okay. What made you pick John?
Because he's chaotic.
He's the only one.
He never takes a vacation.
So, and again, we don't know. Obviously, I wouldn't want to presume he's right for us because we don't know that. So what is it you would say about the work we've done with you to him?
To him? I guess I would say if you're looking to stabilize the accounts you're working with and expand them, Sandler gives you the soft tools that help you figure out how to be more relational. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's great. Hey, would you mind if I made a suggestion?
Sure.
Yeah. I like to use acronyms. You know, my office is always talking about is Rob with another acronym. So you mind if I use an acronym with you?
Please.
And I really appreciate what you're doing. And I want to really make sure you're comfortable with this, Jim. You know, sure. Some people, they're just eager to help me out. And they say, hey, you got to talk to Rob. And they say, yeah, let's take a step back. And let me give you the acronym. The acronym is SODAR. Right?
SODAR?
SODAR. SODAR.
Right? Okay.
And if you think about this and you're talking to him, John, and John mentions to you, oh my God, I'm so busy or I can't get out of my own way. This is somebody who's obviously very tactical versus strategic. They can't work really on their business. Right. So busy.
Right.
S is for the situation, right? And may share your own story. Yeah, let me tell you my own situation. Situation is very simple. Listen, I'm a business owner. I really haven't had my management, time management issues, energy management issues. So O is for opportunity. Opportunity is us. You know, I was introduced to Rob, and D is for decision. I made a decision to spend 5 minutes with him on the phone as a first conversation, have a brief conversation. A is for action. Yeah, I made a decision to meet with him. I decided what the heck. So my action is I met with him. And the result, which is my R, is I engaged him. It's had a profound impact. Can I make the same suggestion to you? Spend 5 minutes on the phone with him. And you decide for yourself.
Yeah.
Are you okay with that?
Oh, well, that makes it sound really easy. I appreciate kind of knowing a direction to go because I hadn't really thought about what would I say if I am introducing you.
Yeah, and that's where things get awkward for some folks. And I don't want anybody to ever feel awkward. And I would say the same thing to you, Jim. If you're not comfortable, it's okay.
Good. Well, that's an outstanding job, Rob. Some lessons learned or observations out of that. I love how Rob is very, very nurturing. He's always taking the pressure off, yet he's courageous enough to ask me who I would think of. And he gave me a context, golfing, which puts me in a situation where I'm thinking of someone. I'm being very specific. And then having the acronym SODAR gives me a very brief playbook. It's almost a little script that I could take a referral through to help them pick up the phone and call you. Anything you want to point out?
Yeah. Also notice another thing. I think where we make a mistake here is we'll say, hey, would you mind spending a half hour on the phone with this guy or an hour meeting at his office? We haven't done that. You know, we teach prospecting, right? And I'm all about the first 8 seconds of the call. If we're making a dial, we haven't earned the right for a 30-second conversation yet or a couple of minutes, but we might have earned the right for 8 seconds. And I think the same thing is here. What executive wouldn't invest 5 minutes of their time to go exploring something that may help them? That's the pattern interrupt. That's going in a different direction.
Love that. Let's shift gears. Let's go to the recapture or resurrect. In that piece, we're going back to clients that have been with us in the past for one reason or another. They're no longer there. What's that re-engagement conversation sound like, Rob?
Okay. So I'm calling you, Jim.
Okay. Right?
And as a precursor, maybe we just had a law of diminishing returns. And you know, you've gone in a different direction and we've sort of stayed in touch, holiday cards.
Right.
But we haven't spoken in a while.
Okay, fair enough.
So we're going to do a lot of, you know, bonding and rapport in the beginning because we did end on a good note. We shook hands. What we all endeavor to do is if we are going to end a relationship, are we shaking hands and are we saying, thank you for the opportunity to work together? I am always a phone call away and I'm setting the stage there. Hey, Jim, it's Rob Fishman.
Rob, good to hear your voice. It's been a while.
You know, Jim, it's good to hear your voice too. And I know we haven't spoken in quite a while. You know, I was thinking about you and the family the other day and something came to mind. I was driving by. I thought, you know, Jim Stevens popped into my head and I thought, oh, what the heck? I'm just going to give him a call and say, what the heck is going on? How are things?
Oh, things are great. We've had a busy couple of years. We've moved our office. We've moved our home. It's been busy.
Yeah, that's great. So when you say busy, what do you think's been occupying most of your time?
I think we're from a business perspective, we're fighting the same battle. We continue to gain market share and we're happy with the results we're getting there.
Oh, that's outstanding.
It's always a challenge though to make sure we're meeting the demand in the way that really gives the clients value. So I guess that's the one area we might be struggling a bit in.
So here's a question for you though, Ben, because obviously you're doing a lot right. So what are you doing right?
Well, I think all the things we've learned through Sandler have helped us. We aren't doing our dog and pony show anymore.
I don't know about how much through Sandler. I appreciate you saying that.
No. It helped us learn to be quiet and listen instead of talking too much. And yeah, the more I think about it, the more I think, yeah, we probably are missing a few steps. I was going to say we do a good job on the upfront contract, but I sat in on a call with one of my sales guys the other day and I thought, for crying out loud, let's at least set the stage. So yeah. I mean, we're doing pretty well.
That's great. And you know, it's interesting when I talk to clients, whether present, active or inactive, I ask them this question and say, you know, they're doing really well. They got some good things going on and they share with me, you know, if there was one thing that could be better, if at all, what that might look like. And that was the purpose of my call today, saying, you know, we haven't spoken in a while. And I'm thinking, you know, there are times people call me or I call them and I speak to them. They say to me, you know what, we're doing great. I find is that one little thing that they say to me, you know, if it was one thing, I guess I would ask you the same question. If there was, and you look at your process, you've done a lot of good stuff, Jim. If there was one thing or one area that could be better right now.
Well, I don't know that this is the area, but really doing what you're doing, I think we lose track of our clients and we build a relationship in the initial project. Once that's over, time passes and distance occurs, and then we probably are losing opportunities because we're not staying engaged.
It may not be that much, you know, when you think about it, look at it. So when you look at your account planning process, then dividing it into different buckets, looking at your accounts that you're keeping, your own customers and getting in front of new opportunity, even the ones that have gone away, your process to get in front of them, and even expanding existing accounts, where do you think you're doing a great job and where do you think it could be better?
I think we do a good job at keeping our clients. I think expanding, I think there's a lot of room there. We're probably leaving money on the table with our current clients. I think attaining new clients, we beat that drum a lot, but I'm not sure how effective we are at it.
Mm. And now we worked, when did we stop working together?
Oh, that was maybe 3-4 years ago.
Okay. Hey, let me make a suggestion. Cup of coffee. Let's sit down and I tell you, it may end up that we have a good visit and I may be able to make some tactical suggestions for you and we shake hands and remain friends. If you're open to that, I've done this with other clients of mine. We're sitting down and re-engaging to talk. It's just a conversation.
No, I'd be happy to do that. Every time we've ever spoken, you've given me some great suggestions. So yeah, let's do it. When should we meet?
You got a calendar handy?
Good. Awesome. Great example. Thank you, Rob. So let's do a debrief of that call. Again, nurturing tonality. I didn't feel any pressure. You used a lot of, in what Sandler we call negative reverse selling. I would say, I have a problem with this. Oh, not a big problem. That type of thing. What would you call out as something to observe in that?
So I'll tell you, in my early years in the business, my business partner, Rich, said to me one day, you've probably heard this term, is your belly button covered?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, here we go. And he gave me probably the best piece of coaching coaching advice I got as a Sandler trainer. He said to me, your Sandler is showing. And I said, what do you mean? He said, you know, when it comes to negative reverse selling, it's a complete different pattern interrupt of what we use, but it has to be very natural and not pushed. It can also, I treat it like a razor blade. Literally, it can do so much damage and really destroy a sale. So we have to be very careful how we say that, you know? So if we're sitting in front of somebody, yeah, you know what? We've been having a problem with this. You know, most salespeople would say, well, yeah, well, how significant a problem has it been, right? And if we go to the negative reverse, we say, ah, come on, it's not a problem. Instead of, yeah, but you got so much other business. So that's a lesson I've learned in how to really use it in a very unassuming way, because you now come back and say, no, it's been a problem for us.
Great illustration. My guest today is Rob Fishman. Rob, give your contact information in case somebody would like to reach out to you.
Thanks, Jim. It's rob.fishman, F-I-S-H-M-A-N, at sandler.com.
And this is Jim Stevens with Sandler Training. My calling is to wake people up from the slumber of mediocrity. I find folks who are busy forgiving themselves and their employees for not trying. They regret working too hard and learning the hard way through trial and error. If that describes you and you're ready to give up some of the insanity of repetition, give me a call at 208-429-9275. We'll have a conversation like Rob suggested and see where that goes. That's 208-429-9275. This is Sandler Training, finding power in reinforcement. Welcome back to the Sandler Training Hour. I'm with Sandler trainer Rob Fishman. Rob is in Long Island, New York. And Rob, Sandler is really about self-improvement, trial and error, personal development. We find that the weak link in any company is that person who's not willing to change. And so we eat our own dog food. We're constantly facing issues we need to change. Share with the listener, what are some of the things you're working on?
Yeah, so let me go back a little bit. 3 years ago, I was diagnosed with cancer. I had bladder cancer, and I had to overcome that little adversity in my life and getting treatment. And I got very involved in the network of trying to help those who have been afflicted with a similar kind of disease. Mm-hmm. And this past year, I lost my dad to leukemia. And wow. Then my business coach of 8 years died suddenly of a heart attack. So it's wow. So it's been a little bit of adversity and it sort of puts us in a place where, all right, well, this is the hand we've been dealt. You know, am I grateful and thankful for what I've got? Yeah. Married to a beautiful wife of 33 years. I got 2 great kids. Everybody's is doing great. And I'm blessed in that respect. I am also extremely fortunate to have the team that we've got on Long Island. And our team is just, we call it Team Awesome. They truly are Team Awesome. I love being in the office with them. Working together has just been, it's not even work. It's just total right. fun. We have a lot of laughter. But I think the piece about is, you know, what personal changes have I gone through? Have we gone through? And a lot of it has been, and we've all hit that, Jim, you know, where we go down. And what do we do to pull ourselves back up? And I'll never forget, as long as I live, our coach, John Shrum, a different coach, not the one that passed. And his advice to me was to behave your way out of the funk. And no matter what funk we hit, we have to learn a way that we're able to take different actions that will get us to a place where we have a change in our own mindset. I think it's challenging for us to just immediately will ourselves into a different mood. You know, I'm going to be happy now and I'm going to be fulfilled now, where that's not so easy to do. Yeah. What are some specific actions that we can take differently?
Yeah, I think that's right. If you're working to improve your attitude and you focus on personal cheerleading and reprogramming your thinking, that's helpful, but it won't sustain you long term. It's the get back to something that you've done well and done consistently and behave your way into that new attitude that helps you feel successful. And that feeling of success will then generate success.
Yeah, I think so. I think those are just great lessons we've all learned. And I am a lifetime project, certainly enjoying the ride.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. So facing the issue of cancer, illness, deaths in the family, boy, those things are really, really tough issues to overcome. What advice do you give to somebody who's in the middle of that battle?
Well, the first battle of cancer, I had the opportunity to talk to some very close friends who have been afflicted also by this awful disease. And here's some things I learned from them, because I'm really not smart enough to think of it on my own. One was one day at a time. Mm. And when she said this to me, this is a breast cancer survivor, a good friend of ours. And she said, one day at a time, right? And it's very easy to go to the dark place of doom and gloom. And then it compounds itself on other stuff. Oh my God, this is it. I'm losing it all. Instead of taking a step back, it's a day at a time. And each day gets blocked into itself. Now it takes us away from that whole strategic mindset of thinking out 3 to 5 or 10 years. But in terms of a survival mechanism, that's a key piece. I might have not, I don't think I shared this with you. My mom is a Holocaust survivor. Mm. And she lost pretty much her whole family during World War II and the Nazis. And what is amazing, and I ask her this question too, how did you survive? Obviously, you know, she was a hidden child, but the fact is of losing your family, saying goodbye to your parents at the age of 11. Now there's a testament to like, what did you do to survive? And she just put on her rose colored glasses and she said, I just need to plug on through. And this is a perfect example of my mom doing what she needed to do, regardless of how she felt at the moment. She was not going to let herself get down in the dumps because she needed to perform. She needed to do. And maybe that's a lesson that we all learned something from. And I think even the way that I dealt with the cancer thing was really about it. It's just a day at a time. And you know, we're at this age where it's things happen, right? And
right.
Days we're at. So yeah, I look even at the Sandler family and several of our colleagues who've had some pretty challenging stuff. They would all say one day at a time.
One day at a time. Rob Fishman, you've been an awesome guest today, Rob. Hey, give your contact information one last time in case somebody would like to reach out to you.
Sure. It's rob.fishman, F-I-S-H-M-A-N, at sandler.com.
And listeners, thank you so much for inviting us into your world. I'm Jim Stevens. My calling is to wake up people from the slumber of mediocrity, trapped in a comfort zone, frustrated because they're living with just enough, ready to accept chaos and volatility in their daily business and relationships, or prone to learn the hard way through trial and error, hoping to eventually figure it out. If you're ready to give up the insanity of repetition, call me at 208-429-9275. That's 208-429-9275. Have a great weekend. And remember, if you measure it, you'll manage it.